We're live, mate.
Hello and welcome back to another deep pit of emotional teenage angst episode of the First Time Watchers podcast.
Because we like to watch.
My name is Tim Costa.
I'm Hermano Da Silva.
And Walter Vinci.
What we like to do on the FTW podcast is find a movie that none of us have seen, watch it together, and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all of our lists of shame. And if you would like to send feedback, remember to email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com. And stay tuned to the end of this episode for other ways to contact us and to find out what we'll be discussing next week. Speaking of feedback.
Yeah, loving the feedback.
There's a little Twitter interaction I want to talk about. So Kyle Turner on Twitter asked, how often does a critic go back on his initial review and basically say, I was wrong about so-and-so film, or I changed my mind? Is it okay to do that? I've been thinking about doing that. So, I mean, I thought
of course it is.
Yeah, I thought it was a very good question, and it did make me think, you know, oh, yeah, does anybody actually do that? Well, somebody else had responded to him, at Doug Tilly. Of course, I'm not sure where the idea that response to art is supposed to be rigid came from, but it's really idiotic. And I responded by saying, I could not agree more. People's opinions change all the time, but for some reason they're afraid to admit it. Like, Wally's afraid to admit that he should actually see The Social Network.
I'm not going
to
see that movie. Fuck that movie. No, but I was going to say Ebert, actually, Roger Ebert actually had a pretty scathing review of The Brown Bunny.
Okay.
No, later on, he basically he ended up rewatching the movie and basically said, yeah, he probably came down a little too harsh on it and on the filmmaker who created it. That's a prime example right there of one of the
wasn't that Vincent D'Onofrio?
Vincent Gallo.
And he toward the end, he said, you know, I was probably just in the wrong state of mind to watch that movie.
That's an interesting point.
Same thing with me. Like, I'm trying to go back and watch Cabin in the Woods. I hated it the first time around, but I want to see if maybe watching it a second time, knowing what to expect, what kind of movie to expect, if that'll soften my opinion of it a little bit.
No, I don't think I'll be watching that movie anytime soon because I feel pretty strongly about my hate for it. But for me, going back and watching Inglourious Basterds, I softened a little bit on my initial hate of that movie. And even though I still don't love the film as a whole, I still do love certain parts of it. So, you know, I can't think of anything other than that I've gone back recently and came back with a different opinion.
I'm trying to think of a movie that I have that reaction to, whether it was originally positive or originally negative. I can't think of anything.
I can think of one you can go back and rewatch.
What's that?
Headhunters.
Oh, yeah, right.
Do it.
I might want another few years to go by before I see that
you suck
thing again. Anyways, in this episode, we will be discussing the 2009 Australian horror film, The Loved Ones. But before we get into that, it is time for yay or nay. This is the part of the show where we discuss what we have seen recently on our own, and I will let Walter go first.
All right, I was actually able to get four movies in, amazingly enough.
Wow.
The first two can be found on YouTube. And the first, I was 1926's Man with a Movie Camera.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I went back and I'm going back in the vaults and watching some oldies but goodies.
Nice.
I heard it's number 8 on AFI's top movies of all time. So I took a stab in the dark to see if maybe I could find public domain version of it on YouTube, and I wasn't disappointed. It takes a little bit of time to sift through it because the movie originally had no score. It was actually scored by a live orchestra during the actual movie. So you'll find a lot of versions of it on YouTube with a band scoring the whole movie. I didn't want to see it with the score because I had done a little bit of research, and apparently, like, a lot of the scores that come out now don't really measure up to how it was originally. You know,
so you saw it completely silent.
Completely silent.
Oh wow!
Hour and 6 minutes.
Oh wow!
And it's pretty cool actually to see what they were able to do back in
1929.
Back in the 1920s with these large movie cameras. There's a couple of scenes that I think are really, really interesting. The first...
Well, but, you know, the synopsis, for people who are not familiar with it, a cameraman travels around a city with a camera slung over his shoulder, documenting urban life with dazzling inventiveness. Now, this is in Russia, right?
It's in Russia. It's in Kiev. Oh, and I can't remember the other two cities it takes place in. But Kiev is one of the cities. And it's pretty cool. There's a lot of, like... It starts off with... You're looking at this upshot of a movie camera... And then climbing on top of it, like he just climbed a mountain, is the movie maker himself with another movie camera, which is pretty cool. There's a lot of like weird like dissolves, not dissolves, but like like split focus with like trolley trains. So you can see like there's like a blurred line in the middle, but like one trolley is coming towards you, one trolley is leaving. And he did some pretty like fairly interesting things. Like at one point, the movie goes to a beer hall and there's a filmmaker inside a beer glass. Like he just kind of gets up and is like looking around. But probably my favorite sequence is toward the end of the movie where it's all done in stop motion. Tripod sets itself up and then kind of collapses a little bit, sets itself up, and then the camera like creeps out of the box, walks up the tripod leg, bolts itself on, turns, the cameras, you know, the cranks are cranking by themselves. It's pretty wild to see, like, knowing how old this actually is.
So it's a pretty good, you know, lesson in kind of film history?
It's a good lesson in film history, early cinematography.
Right.
I did a little research on the director, and he's got a pretty interesting, you know, background, too, that he's, you know, part of. He actually, it's not even his real name. It's got a, the name that he used to produce a Man with a Movie Camera is actually not his real name. He belonged to a collective of other filmmakers who believed only in the documentarian style, and that's the only thing that should be shot. Nothing else. No stories, anything like that.
So where they filmed was in Kiev, Ukraine, Odessa, Ukraine, and Moscow.
Yes. Pretty cool looking stuff. I mean, some stuff that you probably wouldn't expect to see. One of the things I can mention too is the bathing suits. There's a scene where he goes to the beach and you see all these people just, you know, lying on the beach and enjoying the beach. A lot of women in two-piece bathing suits.
Oh, yeah?
Which at that time, think about around here, they weren't wearing.
Right.
You know, they were, you know, neck to toe covered. But
so why do you think that it's ranked so highly on AFI's list?
I think it's because at the time there wasn't anything like it. You know, you have D.W. Griffith who was making his movies, and this guy is, you know, doing like, you know, split diopter and imposing things on into other things, and with him, he's taking the camera everywhere. Like he can do whatever he wants with it. He's basically showing that you don't have to just stay in a studio. You can take your camera, you can make a movie here, you can make a movie there, which is kind of neat. At the time, you know, you figure that everyone's still in the studio system, that's where they're making their movies. So this is a yay, because this is something that, it's only an hour and 6 minutes. It's not a heavy investment of your time. It's a yay. Give it a watch. So let me flash forward the clock a little longer. Another movie I had not seen, Reefer Madness.
Oh, nice.
Watched. I found a version of it in color that was colorized. This movie is absolutely hilarious.
Oh yeah, it's awesome.
It's a riot. I wonder,
Hermano,
like,
have you ever seen this?
No.
I would really love it to see like what would happen if like the producers of this movie were to come to like our time now, where we're basically on the verge of legalizing marijuana.
Oh yeah,
as a societal.
Yeah, 80 years later.
80 years thing, but some of the acting in this is like bizarre. Like,
oh, it's so over the top.
It is incredibly over the top.
It's so propaganda. It's so much propaganda.
It's major propaganda.
Oh, it's so great.
Like whenever the characters are like smoking, they don't smoke like, you know, like you would like a cigarette with two fingers. Their hands are cupped over their mouth, and they're just. Yeah.
It's like they become high on like some weird drug.
It's like PCP.
Yeah, exactly. It's so amazing.
At one point, like someone tries to rape someone else because they're high on marijuana, and I was like, you know, all my friends who smoke weed, I myself don't, but I've never seen any of them get in like this like euphoria. Like I've got to rape someone. you know.
I love the poster. It says "Takes you through hell, the torturer that never stops."
Yes, and the ending of this movie is classic.
Oh, so
where
good.
It's basically a story being retold by a school principal about the dangers of marijuana to a bunch of parents at a PTA meeting, and at the end he's like, "It could be your daughter," and then he points to like someone else off camera, "or yours," and then looks directly at the camera and goes, "or yours," and then the end, and I'm like, this is.
It's amazing.
This is pretty wild. Like this is what they thought at the time. This is what they actually believed. Like this is what it'll make you run people over in the street.
Well, there's also a lot of political machinations behind
this and that. The people who are proponents of hemp at the time and all that. This movie is also a yay. It's just fun to watch.
And it's again, only 66 minutes long.
Yeah, again,
Hermano, you have to see this.
It's not a long investment either.
I think it's available on Netflix Instant
as
well.
And you can watch it on YouTube for free.
Yeah.
It's available on YouTube. It's a yay. Check it out. I'd love to know what people think about this one if they've seen it. And now we go into the little Halloween-y part of the evening where I rewatched The Crow.
Oh, okay.
Was with one of our listeners who had not seen it and popped it in the DVD player and we watched it together, and You know what? I still dig this movie. I see a lot of problems with it.
I've never seen it.
You've never seen it?
I've never seen it.
List of shame, sir.
Oh, yeah. Is it really?
Yeah, I think it's Hermano? Certainly worth seeing.
I think it's worth watching.
Hmm.
Okay. I don't know if it's list of shame worthy, but it's definitely worth watching.
I remember tons of people talking about it when I was in high school. This came out in 94.
94.
And I was right in the middle of high school then. And people, that's all they talked about. You know, it was just like the big thing at the time. I think it was just, I was just avoided it because of that.
Oh, see, I was one of those like Crow like fanatics at the time. Like I went as him for like, what, 3 or 4 years straight for Halloween.
You would.
I had the long hair at the time too, so it didn't help. It didn't hurt. There's a lot of holes in this movie, a lot of like this like, periods of this kind of bad acting, but directed by Alex Proyas, you know, not too, it's got like glimmers of something that could be really, really cool. I think if the script was better and the acting was a little bit better, but I still dug it. I still dug, you know, watching it, from the, you know, beginning to end. I mean, the end does tend to kind of come out of the machine a little bit with, you know, the villains there, but, you know, overall I'd say this is a yay. This is certainly,
is it mainly because of nostalgia?
I think it might have been a lot of, I mean, I saw this movie like 5 times in the theater.
Wow.
I would go to Cinema 140 and like walk down there to go see it and just walk back home. Yeah, it's a yay. I'll give it a yay. And last but not least, you guys are gonna hate me on this one because once again this movie has come up. Rearing its dirty head. Rewatch Blubberella.
I hate you.
And the only reason why I rewatched it is just so I can mention it on the show. So there we go. Off to you guys.
This is what we have to deal with on a regular basis. So be thankful, listeners, that you only have to put up with him for 60 to 70 minutes a week. Hermano?
I'm so glad we're not actually going to discuss it.
No, there's no need to. We already discussed it at length. I just wanted to say Blubberella again on the show.
Awful. Anyway, on to a good movie that I watched. I only watched one movie. I watched a documentary called A Band Called Death. I believe Tim also watched it.
I did.
It's a documentary centered on these three brothers from the 1970s who formed a band named Death. And it kind of chronicles their story of how, you know, they started this band and they were playing punk rock music like 2 years before the Ramones played it.
Wow.
And obviously, you know.
Yeah, they started in 73.
When did the Sex Pistols start?
Later as well, yeah.
But basically it chronicles how they, you know, they were fans of bands like Alice Cooper and The Who.
But they grew up listening to all types of music because being in Detroit, they listen. Their family.
Motown.
They grew up in Motown area.
Yeah, but their family was very open to all types of music, whether it was country or R&B or Motown or rock or anything.
Yeah, these three guys just decided, you know, this is the type of music they want to be playing. So they came with this sound and it didn't sound like The Who or Alice Cooper. Like it just sounded kind of punk rockish and you're like, wow, like how come I've never heard of this band? And that's pretty much what the whole documentary is about how like when they were trying to get their album put together and get signed, one of the hitches to them not getting signed was the name of the band, which was Death. At the time it was everyone's like listening to like gospel and like Motown records in their area, so they're like, you know, like there were suitors, but a lot of people were like, no one's going to buy an album from a band called Death.
Well, who was the producer?
Clive Davis.
They got as far as to meeting with Clive Davis or a representative of Clive Davis. And Clive Davis even liked the music and wanted to sign them, but he requested that they change the name. And they didn't waver on that. And it was mainly due to the one brother, Davis?
David.
David. Because there were three brothers, and David was the one that was really into keeping the name Death because of what it meant to him. You know, it meant more than the word death. It meant, actually, you know, it was like a circle of life thing with him, the way they describe it as to what the word meant. And he came up with this logo, this triangular logo that they go into describing it. And it really meant something so much to him that he refused to change it. They offered them $20,000 to sign if they changed their name.
And back then, that's a lot of money.
But he turned it down, you know. And that comes full circle by the end of the movie, that lesson, you know. And it's actually very touching. I thought I was instantly grabbed by the personalities that were on screen. You know, the two brothers and there were four brothers. Three of them were in the band. Yeah. One wasn't in the band, but helped them along, you know, promoted them and all that kind of stuff. And he was part of the documentary as well. And so the three brothers that were alive, because one of them has passed away, and Davis was the one that passed away. So the three of them talking about what everything meant to them and to Davis and the family and just the way they came across on screen, you know, they were very personable, very instantly you knew that they were very genuine, good people, you know, and they never took anything hard, you know, or in a bad light, when they were turned away at times. They always just went with the flow, essentially, you know, and that's one of the things that really, you know, drew me to them and to their story was the fact that, you know, they just moved on with their lives, essentially. And, you know, some of them joined other bands and created other bands and evolved into other music, you know, and they were always willing to do that. And it just seemed a very, very warm family, you know?
Yeah. I mean, what I gravitated to was just the story, like just seeing how different their lives could have been if they had actually gone and gotten a record deal and there wasn't any kind of hitch with their name. I think the name's great. I mean, I think it fit their music and stuff like that, their style. Like Tim said, like it was more than just the name. It was like kind of like a, almost like a, like the essence of the band. Like yeah. you don't change the name because it changes the whole dynamic of the band. So, and then just the insanity of their story about how, like, they pretty much, like Tim said, like they move on and these tapes, these master tapes are pretty much forgotten of. They recorded like pretty much a full length EP, like seven songs.
Yeah.
And they just pretty much sat in a house for like 30 years.
35 years.
Yeah, but before that happens, they actually pressed like 500 45s.
Wow.
With two songs on them.
To promote themselves, and they would hand it out to local DJs and local radio stations and they got some airtime, but they were always very wary of just the name Death, you know, and it just never really fully caught on.
Yeah.
Until, you know, years later, you know, you got these collectors, you know, looking on eBay, and then there's always this rare single or this rare LP that
people are looking for.
And one is selling for $800, you know. Wow. And it goes, once again, this whole thing about full circle, it comes around to—I mean, this is real life. I'm not really spoiling anything.
Yeah.
It comes full circle to their kids, like the band members of Death. They have kids. One of them has kids, and they are playing in their own band. And they hear this. They hear this single. One of the sons hears the single from a friend, and he instantly recognizes his father's voice. So he asks his father. And his father tells him the story about the band called Death, and so now they're touring, playing Death's music, and also Death has gotten together again, and they're about to record another album. And there's also a very, very touching story of, since their brother died, you know, they need another guitarist. So just the story involving getting that other guitarist is also a very good, strong point of the movie.
I thought the movie was pretty strong. Like Tim said, it gets really emotional at the end and stuff like that. And I thought it was a really well done documentary. I mean, I definitely say yay on it.
You know, this reminded me of the documentary from last year, Searching for Sugar Man. And I had talked about this a few months ago, you know, Searching for Sugar Man. And it won Best Documentary at the Oscars. And I just wasn't that big of a fan of it, mainly because of the, I don't know, maybe the structure of the way it was told or I don't know. There's something about it that just didn't hook me, but this one definitely hooked me. It's definitely worth a watch. I would agree with Hermano that it's a yay. So moving on with my list of movies, I saw a recent release starring Tom Hanks and directed by Paul Greengrass, Captain Phillips.
Well, there you go.
You know, I'm a pretty big fan of Paul Greengrass, you know, the last two Bourne movies. The middle two Bourne movies, I should say. And of course, United 93 is probably the best docudrama you could ever imagine. So he ventures into docudrama territory again with the story of Richard Phillips and the 2009 hijacking, you know, by Somali pirates of the Maersk Alabama. And I think my biggest complaint about this movie is that it's 2 hours and 14 minutes. I think it is a little too long. I think it could have been shorter. I think that was the first thing me and my wife said as we were walking out. I was like, it was a little too long. But overall, it's a good movie. It's a little different, you know, knowing the ending, and knowing the ending is, if you're looking at it from Captain Phillips' side, it's a good ending, you know. Now, I remember, Wally, when you had talked about the trailer, one of your major concerns was...
I don't care about sympathy for any fucking pirates.
It doesn't venture that much into it. You know, it gives you just a little bit into... It really doesn't go give you much backstory of either Captain Phillips or the Somalis, or the lead Somali pirate in this case. And I think you would, if you saw this, you would come away, you know, feeling okay about that, you know, about that it doesn't try too hard to lend sympathy, but it doesn't paint it as a black and white, because like most stories, this is not a black and white story. There, the reasons for at least these pirates, it's not black and white. There is a reason why, because, you know, Somalia essentially is pretty much a land of no government, and there's a lot of drug lords ruling that area. So a lot of the drug lords send their henchmen down to the coast, to where there are villages, you know, fishing villages, and force people to do these hijackings for money. You know, if they don't bring enough money back, you know, there's consequences to pay. So it doesn't go too deep into that. It just gives you a very, very broad general backstory as to, you know, where they come from. So, and it's not heavy-handed at all to try to give you sympathy towards them. It's just giving you that there is a story. That's it. It's up to you to go from there. As for the rest of the movie, I think the best part of the movie are the final 20 minutes. The final 20 minutes are, you know, pretty insane, you know, due to Greengrass's direction. Tom Hanks is probably the best I've seen him in a long, long time. The final 20 minutes is probably some of the best of Tom Hanks's career. It's not a truly, truly deep story. It's pretty, pretty basic. And although I did enjoy it, it's probably something I won't remember a lot years from now. But I think it's definitely worth a watch. I would give it a mild yay. And finally, I saw a movie that I guess could have been considered on my list of shame from 1988, called Heathers.
Wow.
I had never seen Heathers. Now, obviously, this is people our age, this is a pretty big movie, you know, growing up.
I disagree.
Really?
I think this movie's way overrated.
Well, no, not whether or not it's overrated or not, it isn't what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that it was a pretty big movie for people of our generation. I think growing up, people that saw this movie are like, oh my God, you know, you got to see Heathers. I think it was pretty popular.
I think it's cult. Like, it's definitely a cult classic.
Yeah.
I mean, I never saw it in the theater. I only saw it on VHS, like years later, where someone's like, you've got to see this movie. And I'm like, this, it's not that good.
Yeah, right. It's structured is not that good, but I think its message is pretty interesting when it comes to teen bullying and teen suicide, I guess. However, it's a movie that could never be made today. Never. Especially with some, news stories about online bullying and teenage suicide. This takes it to, I mean, this is a dark comedy of all dark comedies. It doesn't take anything seriously at all. It doesn't say, you know, hey, we're looking at it in a comedic light, but really, this is a serious subject. It doesn't take it as a serious subject at all. So I think looking at it from today's point of view, it's kind of tough. If I try to take myself back to 1988, now, Winona Ryder was in this, and she was, okay, this movie I think was released also in, this is like 88, 89. So she was born in 71. So she was about 17, 18. So I'm going to feel pretty comfortable in saying that she was effing hot then.
younger
Christian Slater?
No, I was going to say.
Oh, Shannon Doherty.
And Shannon Doherty's in it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot of familiar faces in it. But, I mean, it's a pretty haphazard movie. It kind of floats from one scene to another. It doesn't really, you know... I don't know. There's just not a lot of good connecting through lines to it. So, I mean, I think ultimately, I'm glad I saw it. I can understand why it's kind of a cult classic, why people look back fondly on it. You know, there are some pretty funny scenes, some pretty funny lines. It's a good hard R movie. But, I mean, I think ultimately I have to give it a meh.
I love my dead gay son.
Hey guys, I just wanted to mention, you know what? We have a YouTube page now.
Do we?
We do. We have a little bit of content on it now, and we're going to be adding content, you know, soon as we go. So if you visit youtube.com/1sttimewatchers, you'll be able to see in-show content, behind-the-show content, and maybe some extras that each of us would like to share. Once again, that is youtube.com/1sttimewatchers. Just another way to enjoy the show.
Wait a second, what's YouTube?
Now it is time for Trailer Hitches. This is the part of the show that gives us an opportunity to mention a trailer that either gets us on board for an upcoming movie or makes us want a bitch. I will let Hermano go first.
I watched a trailer that Wally's going to be kicking himself that he didn't watch this and get to talk about it beforehand.
You know what? I have a feeling I'm going to kick myself because I probably a trailer I have seen and just completely am spacing out on it at the moment. Good.
No, you would have talked about this if you had seen it. I watched the trailer for a movie called Nonstop, starring Liam Neeson as an air marshal aboard a flight. I was in pretty much right away. As soon as I saw his name attached, I was like, ooh, I got to see what this is. I mean, my favorite movie of last year was The Grey. So,
Do you forget Unknown?
What? Anyways, that movie doesn't exist. So the trailer starts with introduction to Liam Neeson and... it starts off saying that he hates to fly, and then
along with his wife Julianne Moore,
along with his, is that his wife? I didn't get the sense that she was.
Oh, okay, maybe just
Anyways, he sets up that he hates to fly, but then you see him go into the bathroom, and it reveals that he has a gun and an air marshal badge. So he's an air marshal for the flight
with the dramatic music. Done.
Yeah, the music just kicks in right as soon as the gun drops. Boom. And you're like, oh shit, it's about to go down. And then he gets a text on his phone and it says, I'm going to kill one person every 20 minutes unless I get $150 million deposited into this account. And it kind of a cool effect where you see like the actual text bubble pop up above his phone. So like as he's reading the text. So he texts back and he's like, hey, like this is a secure line. What the hell are you doing? How'd you get this? And sure enough, he sets the timer on his watch to 20 minutes, and sure enough, in 20 minutes in the trailer, someone dies. And he goes to the captain, and the captain's like, how can anyone kill anyone on this plane without anyone seeing? And I'm just like, oh shit, that's right. How can they do it? And then the trailer goes from there, and it looked, all this shit starts happening. Like Liam Neeson is like being framed. They're like, wait a minute, that account number is yours. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, Jesus.
And it goes from there. He's like, no, this is a frame job. And like shit starts happening and blah, blah, blah. You get a bunch of action set pieces. But the part that made me throw my hands in the air in victory was there's this like shot where like turbulence knocks his gun up in the air and he catches it in midair and goes, boom. And shoots somebody.
Does he say boom?
I wish.
Okay.
Because it would have been that much better. But no, he does not.
I'm just trying to picture this.
He's like, boom, motherfucker.
Now the director of this is Kwame Collette Serra. So you remember I mentioned Unknown? Yeah, he directed it.
No way.
Yeah, and he also directed Orphan, which is not a bad movie.
No, I've seen Orphan. Orphan's not bad.
Yeah, but he directed House of Wax.
All right, so it's like, eh.
Up and down, but I think this movie, along with the fact that it comes out in February, is win-win. Hitchin'.
February. Nice. Wally?
I want to talk about a movie. I'm breaking the rules here for a second in Trailer Hitches. Because this movie hasn't even started shooting yet. It starts shooting in November in Charlotte, North Carolina. Starring Michael Parks and Justin Long. Directed by Kevin Smith. Tusk.
A tusk.
It's about a mad scientist who turns Justin Long into a killer walrus.
Oh, God.
This is actually happening.
A dead man sewing his victim into a walrus suit.
Yep. And they're getting like prosthetic makeup. I've seen like some of the like prelim photos of Justin Long like in the preliminary like suit, like where they're like measuring him up for the you know the latex fitting. But yes, we're going to be seeing a movie by Kevin Smith about a killer walrus, and I am hitching
a killer man walrus.
Walrus man, yes.
Oh, boy,
I'm hitching this because this is outside of his usual realm, just like Red State was, and Red State is fucking awesome.
I adore
that movie.
I don't say it's awesome.
I think it's the best movie ever.
I think Dogma's pretty damn good.
And Kevin Smith doing a monster movie is going to be something to see. So even though the movie hasn't even started shooting yet, and I haven't seen any trailers for it, I've only read blog reports and have seen like paperwork on it. I am hitched.
Do you think when he gets into the walrus suit, he's going to back up from a mirror and he'd say, "I'd fuck me"?
I fucking hope so.
Anyways.
Walrus yes, motherfuckers.
Walrus yes.
That's the hashtag for this movie. Hashtag walrus yes.
So the trailer that I want to talk about was actually brought up by a fellow person on Twitter who goes by, his name is Troy Ford. He goes by @TroySpoke. And he asked us to watch a trailer for his upcoming movie called Sacrament. Now, it's not The Sacrament. It's just called Sacrament. And I think he's just involved in it because the director goes by Sean Ewart. If you just type in Sacrament on IMDb, you'll find it. So supposedly it comes out on December 31st of this year. And it's a horror movie. And I'm very willing to, oblige people when they ask us nicely.
If you ask us nicely, we'll review your
stuff. And so the thing that I have to say after watching the trailer is that the cameras look very similar to maybe what you guys have used. I'm talking to Wally and Hermano. Maybe
like DSLRs?
Canon DSLRs?
Yeah, they look like maybe it's like 5Ds.
Right.
Something like that.
And it kind of, honestly, it kind of looks like an amateur, maybe student, maybe a little bit more than a student film, like an amateur film. It looks like somebody who's obviously just trying to get started. And, based on some of the acting in it, maybe got some friends or some semi-professional actors in this. I'll say that I really didn't get a grasp of what the story was about. I saw some imagery that, it kept escalating in horror, if you will. The synopsis on IMDb is pretty long. I'm not going to go ahead and read the whole paragraph, but essentially it looked like maybe some people visiting in friends or maybe getting together at a getaway of some sort, and then getting involved in some sort of kidnapping and maybe torture. I don't know, you guys saw it, so what did you gather from it?
We talk about trailer cutting. Like, this trailer has a lot of extraneous stuff at the very beginning,
right,
which I would say as an editor you probably would want to shorten it,
right,
or take it out and just only focus on the main characters. It feels like there's a lot of characters in this. Like, a lot of stuff's going on. Again, it's also really hard to gather. I mean, I'm taking something away from the website as to what the movie's about. I mean, the website is sinnersfordinner.com.
Okay.
So I'm guessing that there are some cannibals involved.
Yep.
And I'm also going to guess that there's some sort of, cult. I'm thinking a Westboro Baptist type, cult, hyper-religious.
Maybe something similar to Red State.
Something similar to Red State. That's one of the things I was thinking, too, where you have, these people who are devoutly religious to some sort of cause and apparently eat people that they feel are
sinners
or, deem as, unholy or unworthy or whatever.
Right.
There's some interesting little shots here. Like, there's a neat little crane shot where it comes down from the sky. Some of the shots, it looks like the way it's edited, it's like they took a take and dropped that into the trailer. There's a scene where a guy's got a cane and is about to whack some guy behind the head. But rather than see it on like fluid motion,
right.
you see him actually pick the cane up and then go to smash. And it would probably be more effective to just swing.
Right.
I'm curious. I mean, I'm curious to see where this movie's going to get released, because I'd like to. I mean, I'll check out the finished product.
Right.
When it does come out.
Yeah, being you know amateur filmmakers yourself, I'm sure you'd be interested in seeing
it. Yeah,
another.
I mean, I'll give it a look. If you're out there, tweet us. Let us know where we can find it when it does come out.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I didn't get a good sense of what the movie was about from the trailer. It wasn't like I wouldn't even call it a story trailer. I'd call it maybe like a teaser trailer, like just getting kind of the sense of the tone of the movie
yeah.
more than what the movie's about. I wonder if this is just an early trailer and they're going to actually cut a story trailer
yeah.
At a later time. But overall, I saw some things I liked. I mean, I thought cinematography-wise, the shots looked pretty clean. They looked nice.
Sure, yeah.
Like Tim said, it looked like it was shot potentially on DSLRs, maybe like a little higher end than the ones we use, like Canon 5Ds, Mark II or Mark IIIs. And I'm definitely into the horror genre, so I saw enough to where I'm interested. I just would like to get a better sense of what the movie's about from, you know, maybe in another trailer or something like that, because just watching that trailer alone wasn't enough to, like, sell me on whether or not, you know,
yeah.
I'm really interested. But, right. I mean, it piqued my interest.
Yeah, I'd agree with you, or it piqued my interest, too, you know. So, you know, once again, I thank Tom for, you know, directing me towards that trailer. We'll link to it, I think, on our show notes.
Yes.
And also, I'll link to it again on Twitter so that people can see the trailer for themselves. So, you know, I'll tentatively hitch to it right now.
Right on.
Guess what, Wally?
What's up, Tim?
You know that we have merchandise available for purchase.
You don't say.
I do say.
What do we have?
T-shirts and more, I'm sure.
I'm sure we'll have more.
If you visit Zazzle.com/first-time-watchers. I'm sure in the future you'll be able to purchase just about anything with our logo on it.
Just about anything. I've got some good ideas that are coming down the pipe.
Nice.
What about five-toe socks?
Ooh. Do they have five-toe socks? If they do, you know, I will do a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on every toe. How about that?
So like a plan.
And it'll be like the little part of our logo that's like the countdown from the movie. So you have like the 1, 2, 3 all the way down to the end.
You know, when you point down to your shoes and you point at each of your toes, people can't see that. They can only hear you right now.
They can imagine in the theater of their mind.
So please show your support for the show by visiting Zazzle.com/first-time-watchers and find an item that you'll be proud to wear.
New stuff coming soon.
Once again, that's Zazzle.com/first-time-watchers. Okay, let's talk about The Loved Ones.
Say
happy. Happy. Suck it. Show me! When I find my prince, this is the song we're gonna dance to. And there's only one way to find out if it's you.
The plot. When Brent turns down his classmate Lola's invitation to the prom, she concocts a wildly violent plan for revenge. The writer and director, Sean Byrne. The actors, Xavier Samuel, Robin McLeavy, Victoria Thane. Hermano. We are cheating a little bit with the normal format of our show. We do call ourselves the first time watchers. However, you have already seen this movie about, what, 12 months ago?
I watched it close to 10 months ago.
Okay. And you did briefly talk about it during that yay or nay segment then. And the reason we are discussing it tonight is because you enjoyed this movie a lot and recommended to us for Spooky Halloween Movie Month.
Spooky!
So why don't you remind us why you liked it so much?
Well, first I'll say that the reason I recommended it, and knowing that we are the First Time Watchers podcast, and I know that I had seen it before, but I had recommended it to you guys 10 months ago and you guys still hadn't seen it. So I'm like, I'm going to force these guys to watch this movie because I enjoyed it that much. And you know what, guys? I still enjoyed it. I watched it again just last night. And I still really dig this movie. I think it's such a refreshing movie to have watched in the horror genre, considering that a lot of the stuff that the horror genre for the past few years has been so saturated in stuff like the Saw movies, the Paranormal Activity movies. Everyone copycats those movies and makes more movies like that. You get Insidious, you get fucking Sinister, you get all these movies that are all about pretty much the same exact thing. And it's so good to see a movie like this, which is just kind of like a classically told horror movie, kind of like Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I think I mentioned it back then when I watched it. I just really enjoy this movie. I love the way it's shot. I love the way it looks. I think it's definitely this dude that directed it, Sean Byrne, is definitely a fan of old school horror, much like Ty West and guys like that. And I forget his name, but the guy that directed Your Next. Like, I'm so glad that these movies are coming back slowly but surely, because these are the type of movies that in the horror genre that I enjoy more than like the haunted house jump scare type movie. Like, I know this movie's not for everyone. I have a feeling you guys, the way you're looking at me right now, do not share my sentiment, because I know that there are people out there that will just immediately dismiss this as like a torture movie like Hostel, where I think it's a lot more than that. There's a lot more going on. I still had the same issue in this movie that I did the first time with the subplot with the friend, though it didn't bother me as much this time, because I felt like by the end of it, I think it's, I'll use one of Tim's words, it's earned. Even though it takes maybe a little bit too long to get to the point of what's going on with the girl. And just all around, like, I just like the performances. I like the main character. I can't remember his name. Is it Billy?
Hang on. Brent.
Brent, sorry. Brent. I love his scenes where he's subjected to physical pain and he internalizes that and makes it and just almost overwrites it with the emotional pain he's feeling and just kind of makes that the focus of what's going on, and just so he doesn't feel that physical pain. Like, I loved how all that stuff was conveyed in the movie and how every time, like, all that guilt he feels for something that happens at the beginning of the movie, like, every time he I thought he did a really believable job of conveying what, like, a teenager, how they would deal with something with guilt or like depression, where,
so yeah, with a lot of horror films there's a lot of, you know, subtext,
yeah,
and there's a theme or a message that they're trying to convey. So you think that's what it is guilt in this?
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. Like, just especially towards the beginning of the movie, like, obviously there's guilt there. There's a depression. You can see it from him. You could see it from his mom.
And maybe even teenage obsession.
Yeah, and you see like what he does to deal with the pain. I mean, he turns to cutting himself, and he carries a razor blade around his neck. And I just love the way that was conveyed. I thought it was really believable. I thought the girl and the father were awesome as the villains in this movie. Like, they were great. Like, I loved their performances, and just how sadistic they were, and how you're just kind of shown almost in like a yearbook fashion, like how long they've been doing what they're doing, and you just see like just how fucked up they are. And I'm anxious to hear what you guys thought. So I'll just stop right there.
Wally?
Well, so when the police come to my house and they check my searches, I was verifying whether or not all these things that they were doing in the movie actually would do what they do in the movie, such as injecting somebody's neck with bleach so they can't scream.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, the police, when they show up, they're gonna see this, and I'm gonna go right to jail. I couldn't find any definitive answers to most of these things. I am not a torture porn type of horror movie guy. So this movie was a hard sell once it gets going.
Now, why aren't you? What about it?
I don't find any horror in someone just mutilating someone just for shits and giggles. You know what I mean? Which is essentially what I feel that the two villains do. They like to do this, and they've been doing it for a long time. The subplot with the friend, by the time that gets paid off, I'm already all set. I was like, I have no idea why these two people are even in this movie. This is just getting monotonous. Get to the fucking point. Where are we going with all this? Why do we keep cutting back to these two clowns? But later on, when there's that reveal toward the end. I'm making it sound like I hated this movie, but I actually don't hate it. It's just that the kind of genre is a real hard sell for me to get behind and to be like, yeah, about. But it's one of those movies that after seeing, and I saw it 2 weeks ago, it's kind of marinated a little bit, so my opinion of it has softened somewhat. Like, if you had asked me, if I watched it, like, say, yesterday before we recorded the show, I probably have a much harsher opinion of it. Because, I mean, there is a lot of that torture porn stuff. And because whenever I'm watching one of these movies, my first thing is, like, how would I get out of this? Like, if I woke up tied to a chair, like, how would I get out of this? This could be a problem for me.
That must have been easy for you to do, because as I was looking at this guy, I was like, this guy kind of looks like Wally did about 10 years ago. He had the same long hair.
Yeah.
And facially, he kind of looked somewhat similar back then.
Yeah, it was a little bit lighter.
Yeah, so I was like, wow, this dude, now that I'm looking at it for a second time, I'm like, he kind of looks like Wally did 10 years ago.
There's a part that I thought was kind of, I don't know, kind of like a bit of a throwaway, is when he's up in the tree.
Yeah.
And they're throwing rocks at him. That kind of took me out of the whole, like scariness of it. Because, like, you're being chased, and his feet are still tied. Like, he's trying to get away. And he gets up the tree, and all they do is throw rocks at him until he falls down. I'm like, yeah, it's kind of... I think you could have done something a lot more intense, like with him like hiding somewhere else on the property or hiding somewhere else and being stalked by both of them. Mm-hmm. That would have been far more tense for me.
At that point where he's being chased by the car, he knows that he has to get to away higher from ground.
Yeah.
Because this guy's, obviously, he can't outrun this car. He has to do something. And his feet weren't tied at the time. He had
Oh, that's right. He was. He had set himself free.
When he was under the car.
But like, I don't know. I think it would have been better if the tree just went down instead of just... him hiding in the tree while they throw rocks at him. So that kind of slowed things down a little bit.
I mean,
bit
you say
me.
Rocks, but they were throwing like fucking like softball sized like giant rocks.
Yeah, but
at him.
He also had a pretty big, you know, pretty big tree to hide by. It wasn't like he wasn't like behind twigs. He had that huge trunk. He just, I mean, wait him out.
Yeah.
So I came away from this movie with one big meh, you know, because As the movie's going along, I'm like, oh, I've kind of seen this before, and I've seen this before, and I've seen this before. And even though all these things haven't been in one movie like this, I've seen all these elements before. And I don't know. I also found it wildly predictable, extremely predictable. I mean, so predictable that I was like, yeah, I'm right.
Even the B story?
Okay, that wasn't nearly as important to me, and like you, Wally, I was like, get to the point. What is the point of the story?
I thought that was a great reveal. I just thought it took forever to get there.
I didn't think it was a great reveal because it wasn't revealed well. It wasn't edited well, because how everything interconnected from that standpoint, from the side story, it just didn't connect well to me because there wasn't enough of a reveal, or the reveal itself wasn't a big payoff to me. I thought that the musical cues were way too on the nose, you know, especially with the shirts that they're wearing or that Brent is wearing. Come on, really? I don't know. I did like some of the ideas behind it, like, the pit, if you will. Once Hermano said, you know, the storybook aspect of flipping through and seeing the history, you know, I did dig that, but why are they doing this? You know, you get the idea that there's an incestuous relationship between, what's her name?
Lola
and her father. But, and who is Bright Eyes, the woman that they have there that they've zombified, is she the mother? Is she an aunt? Who is she?
Well, the first time I watched it, I thought it was just another.
I thought it was like another woman. Like, another,
well, that
another
wouldn't make it have made any sense.
Competitor.
But this time watching it, I got a different sense that it actually was her mother.
Okay.
Should we be in the spoilers about that point? Because I mean, that happens toward the that reveals the toward Bright the end Eyes? Of the movie. Yeah, where they reveal who Bright Eyes is, because they don't reveal that until like the very end.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about other stuff then.
I don't know if it's necessarily a spoiler. It's not integral to the plot of the movie. I mean, it's just who this character could be.
Other things, like when it comes to animals, do you have to kill a dog? Do you have to?
At that point, I wanted justice. Whoever the villains are in this, they must pay for hurting this dog.
Yeah, and then, you know, there's a scene in here which reminded me of something in the end of Misery. So like I said, all this stuff, I've seen elements of it elsewhere. There wasn't anything truly original to me. And if you talk about themes, like themes of obsession, you know, it's obvious that she is obsessed, but I mean, ultimately, what does that mean to me? It doesn't mean anything. You know, he is feeling guilty for, you know, inadvertently killing his father. You know, at the beginning, as soon as they swerve around that bloody figure, I'm like, well, I know where that bloody figure came from. You know, that's how predictable this movie was for me. You know, I immediately knew when, and this is the first 5 minutes of the movie, he swerves around that person in the middle of the road.
Yeah, but you couldn't have known that until she actually abducts him.
Well, I knew that was there was
pretty
an abduction.
It's a pretty easy guess. It's like
you can make the guess. I don't think that's like. But moment.
That scene revoked a lot of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre for me. The remake.
Yeah.
See, what I loved about that scene is that the scene where you get later, where she's telling him to, she's showing him the yearbook, and he sees the picture of that same guy, and he realizes that these people, not only are they didn't just affect my life now, they affected it 6 months ago.
I get it.
I love that, how it all comes back around. Like, that realization, that look he has in his eyes of anger instantly.
Oh, okay, but is the filmmaker, does he think we're dumb enough that we can't make that connection ourselves? Does he have to flash back?
No, I think it goes right back to the title of the movie, The Loved Ones. It's not just about this abduction and all this stuff. It's about everything else you see before that.
Sure.
How this movie has, these acts have affected the people that are left behind.
Right.
Like the policeman father who stays awake by the phone waiting for it to ring because they don't know. There's an uncertainty there.
Yeah. So
with the mom as well.
Exactly. But I don't know why, until there's a reveal towards the end, I don't know why they're staying awake. You know, I never even understood why they were staying awake. I was like, what's the point of this? You know, why? I understand why Brent's mother would be awake. I understand why she is withdrawn and her obviously lost weight and is just in a deep depression. I understand why, but this other family, you know, I don't know why
the policeman's family?
Yeah, I don't know.
You get that. You get that in a paper clipping, which actually gives away what that daughter is going through even before it's revealed what she's going through. Like, you see the little paper clipping and the girls
says, in Lola's book?
Yeah, policeman's family struggling with loss of son or something like that.
Okay.
And I agree with you. It takes that little side plot. Takes way too long to get to the point. Just going constantly cutting back to them and what they're doing outside of the school.
Yeah.
I'm like, I could care less. It took way too long. But then I look at the length of the movie and it's like only an hour and 25 minutes. And it felt longer than that because they just kept cutting back to these two. And it didn't bother me as much this time because I already knew where it was going. The first time I'm like, oh, that's all right. That's another layer to add on to this movie. But I think they took way too long. You didn't need to spend like 20 minutes with these dudes or whatever.
Right.
That tends to drag out. Like that was like the one. That was the thing that really slowed the pacing of the movie for me, was that subplot.
Yeah. Like, I couldn't stand the kid. I thought he was just like a douchey kid. And then like the girl, I was interested enough in her to see like, why is she being so distant, so like cut off? And
well, she was so bad at acting that way that I really didn't care.
I cared once she got home and you see the father open the door and she's like, why can't you find him? That line alone sold.
That is a great line from the movie.
That plot for me, even though I still felt like it didn't really belong just to get to that point.
I kind of rolled my eyes at that point.
No, see, I didn't care
about anybody in this movie.
I dug that part. That part where I just wish it didn't take. Just I didn't want to have to sit through the fucking prom and then like drinking and smoking. I'm just like, that's
no. I cared about Brent. I cared about, but I mean, like I said, this movie was so predictable. I kind of knew where this was going. I knew where his story would end up, you know. And then, I mean, I don't want to get too much into spoilers, but I will say the film looks beautiful. It's gorgeous. It's beautifully filmed.
Excuse me.
Bless you. But I mean, I just think that there needed to be a slight, the script needed another once over, and maybe some of the editing. Like I said, some of the stuff was just way too on the nose. The music cues, the editing of some of the flashbacks, when he's thinking back. I don't know. And you know, just obviously I knew the basic plot of this movie. So as soon as Lola shows up at the beginning around his locker, I'm like, oh, okay, I know what's happening. But you know, why are they doing this in the first place? Why are they so cannibalistic or masochistic.
Sadistic.
Sadistic everything. Istic, you know? Why are they like this? How did this family... I would have got liked a little bit more story from their point of view as to how they became this way.
See, in movies like this, it wouldn't have even mattered. Like, would it matter to you to know that they were completely normal and they just turned? That would make less sense to me than to know that they were always psychotic.
No,
like, they've been doing this since she was a little girl.
No, yeah, I agree. That is interesting.
Trickle down to the girl.
And I would have liked maybe a little bit of her grooming process, you know, as to how she developed this way. Obviously, this is normal for her.
Yeah.
But if she can act this way in her home life, how does she act so normal in her? How does she develop that dichotomy,
yeah,
you know, of lifestyle?
I never got the sense that she was normal, even in that scene in school. I mean, she's standing outside of a boy's car
while they're having sex.
He's having sex, yeah, with his girlfriend. Like, she's just staring.
I know, but still, obviously, she has gone through this length of high school,
yeah,
you know, this length of schooling to be able to somehow progress normally, you know? Mm-hmm. She may be an outcast of some sort, but
still. She definitely seemed outcastish to me. Like, she approaches him very, very shyly, very, like, just kind of, you know, tiptoeing over to him and just kind of sneaking up on him and asks him very shyly, like, will you go to the prom with me?
Sure.
He's like, well, I have a girlfriend. You know, I'm going with her.
Yeah.
And obviously she doesn't take that lightly and she plans her little scheme there, but... I dug this movie. Like, I wouldn't even call it torture porn. There are, like, obviously torture elements in,
yeah,
it, but yeah. I think it's far and above more going on in this movie than in a movie like Hostel, where it's just people getting their kicks torturing people.
There's more story to this movie than there is in Hostel.
Well, no, yeah, that's why I dug a movie like Hostel 2, because then you get the backstory of how something like that company gets developed, you know, or you know, why it is what it is, or how it's financed and all that. There's just a little bit there, you know, and that's kind of why I dug the first two Hostel movies and why I probably would prefer it to this movie, you know, because to me it's just lacking a little bit. It's not a bad movie. You know, it's well made. It has a decent structure. You know, I can understand the appeal of it, but for me, it just didn't really work ultimately.
Yeah. And I'm coming to this movie as a fan of the Hostel,
yeah,
movies. I actually own the first one and I enjoyed the second one. There was just something about this movie. I think a lot of it has to do with, like I mentioned in you know, my opening remarks for it, where it's just like, it's so refreshing to just see a movie like this. Like, like Wally said, he doesn't get into these type of horror movies, but these are the type of horror movies that I actually prefer to, like, a ghost story or another found footage paranormal activity movie. Even though I enjoy those movies on a certain level, I would always go back and like movies like this or You're Next or like Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I even enjoy like the slasher films more than like ghost stories and just another jump scare moment. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I like seeing the horrific elements to this movie more than just another way to, you know, slow down the music and say boo.
Right.
You know what I mean?
No,
or
sure,
have a cat,
yeah,
jump into frame or something.
Oh,
like,
no,
that.
Yeah, it's not a typical.
Like, I
thing.
Didn't think there was anything cheap in this movie. Like, I tend to see in a lot of like the Saw movies.
No, I agree with you. There's nothing cheap about this movie. It's just, like I said, there's elements in here that I've seen from other movies.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, but I mean, is that necessarily a bad thing to see things done before, but done in a good way?
I didn't see it done in a different way. That's why. I didn't see anything.
No, but something done well, like we mentioned with The Conjuring, nothing new in that movie. But done well.
Well, there's a story there that I cared about. In this one, I really, and ultimately in The Conjuring, I really didn't have, I didn't find it very predictable. You know, I
found that movie pretty highly predictable.
Really?
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
I had that movie figured out half an hour in.
Well, like,
I mean, did you really think that anything bad, it was going to
be other?
No,
of course, by the end, I know, yeah, for the most part, everybody's going to come out okay.
Unscathed, yeah.
Right. But still, how they get there. In this movie, in The Loved Ones, I figured out how everything was going to progress pretty easily. You know?
See, if maybe I'm coming from a point of where I've seen other Australian horror movies, like Wolf Creek.
Yeah.
And knowing how that movie ends, that's what made this movie unpredictable to me. I didn't know that anyone was going to come out of this unscathed, because if you've seen Wolf Creek, that movie doesn't end happily for everyone. Like,
okay,
bad things happen in that movie that make you like kind of question, like, wow, I didn't see this coming. Like, they set it up like it's going to be a happy ending and it's not.
Wait,
or movies like
here's another one, like House of a Thousand Corpses.
Yep.
You know, that's one where nothing good happens by the end.
I hated, yeah, that movie,
but I appreciate that movie. Even The Devil's Rejects, which I don't think is as good of a movie, I still think I appreciate that because you're following these people who are despicable. They're hateful. There's no reason to root for these people. However, you're still following them and wondering what the hell's going to happen, you know? So that movie, and I found those movies wildly unpredictable because of how unpredictable the main characters were. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's a different perspective than it is for this movie, The Loved Ones. I don't know what else to say about.
No, it's fair. I mean, I going into this after you guys had expressed so much enjoyment out of the other two movies and this movie being so starkly different.
Yeah,
I was like, I wonder if it's really going to turn them off because I mean, we've seen Night of the Creeps and Reanimator to start off our horror movie.
I completely recognize how different this is compared to the first two of our Halloween movies.
Yeah,
and that's perfectly fine to me. It's perfectly acceptable to me. I can understand. I can appreciate.
I just meant in a way that the other two movies were kind of light and fun and right. kind of like nostalgic movies.
Yeah, I know.
Practical effects, all that jazz.
Right.
And this one's a much more dark.
Oh yeah.
You know, sinister movie.
Yeah, I like dark movies. You know, but
okay. I was on the fence. I was like, these guys are either gonna be right down the middle or they're not gonna like.
I'm
that.
Pretty much down the middle of it.
Yeah.
We've really disappointed Hermano.
Spoilers because something I wanted to bring up.
Okay, well, let's go into spoilers. Okay, Wally, what was spoiler?
The part that I actually really dug that left me going, "Where the fuck are we gonna go from here?" is when she has the drill and she's drilling into his head. I'm like, "Oh, he's gonna escape this." And then he doesn't. I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, now where are we going to go with this? And they're like, go get the water. And then I'm like, nope. All right. How are you going to get out of this? You need to get out of it now. This is like your last chance before they boil your brain.
I thought that was a really good tense scene. The first time I saw it.
Yeah, I agree.
I was really bummed. I thought it was going to be, I don't want to spoil Wolf Creek for you guys. I won't. But I thought it was another Wolf Creek scenario where I was like,
he's going to get zombified and
like,
thrown in the pit.
Are you serious? And again? What the hell's up, Australia?
Yeah, don't believe in happy endings.
Speaking of the pit, you know, that reminded me of like The Descent, just the creature, how they are, you know, down there. But yeah, like you said with that scene, yeah, that was a tense scene because it's revealed in stages of how they get to that. So wondering how he gets out of that. Like I said, I knew he was going to get out of it, but at what point does he get out of it? You know, it's pretty interesting.
Mia made a point and she was like, wait a minute. So they dressed him up in that suit, right? And I'm like, yeah.
And they didn't see the razor blade on his neck?
Exactly. She's like, they left him with a razor blade on his neck. And I'm like, did they? I was like, or did he have it in his pocket or something? Like, I'm not sure like how he got that.
He had it.
You know what? No, I think it was in his pocket because they show him walking away in from his mother's house, and he's clenching it in his fist. He's cutting his fist, and I think he put it in his pocket.
After that.
Yeah, but he's still. I mean, was he wearing jeans or he's wearing a full suit?
I think they just put. I mean, yeah, really. I don't know. Can nitpick this. Does it really matter?
No, I mean, it just kind of opened my eyes. I was like, oh shit! Did she find a fucking plot hole? And I was like, damn it. Don't ruin this movie for me. I really enjoyed it. But the other scene I really enjoyed was the part where she's telling him to cry while the father's nailing that knife through his foot.
Yeah.
She's like, cry. And he's internalizing that pain. He's like, he's using the flashback of his mom and his father to like internalize that physical pain and make it more like, you know, like just think about how angry he is at the fact that that's how his life has become because of these people.
Didn't she, when she's forcing him to pee...
Yeah.
Didn't she also say, oh, it's crying?
Yes.
What was the point of that?
It was just like, a creepy element to her character.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, he was trying to find a way to get out of the chair. Maybe if he has to go to the bathroom, then maybe they'll let him.
He can find a way out from there. I would have had a lot more respect for this movie if they actually showed her holding his penis.
She does. She blows him.
No, if they actually showed her holding his penis.
All right, so you want to see more penis, Tim?
Well, like I said, I respect movies that are willing to go all out, you know?
What about the finger looking good scene? Another fucking drumstick scene.
Oh, Killer Joe did it so much better.
You think so? I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Shut up. That's up on my queue.
Oh,
we're done with the Halloween stuff.
Oh, I can't wait for you to see that.
Oh, my God. I mean, this movie kind of did it first. I mean, this movie came out in 2009. So, like, I don't know if maybe Killer Joe is like an homage to this movie. But
I will say this in my little bits of research. Like, well, could these things have actually, I mean, I could see like nailing someone's feet to the floor and all that stuff. It turns out that Jeffrey Dahmer actually used to drill people's heads and like boil their brains, like when he was collecting bodies up in, back in the day. That's pretty.
Yeah, wild. that Drano or that whatever.
It's supposed to be bleach. Yeah, that blue substance she injects into his neck.
The point is that
he can't scream.
Yeah, like it somehow affects your vocal cords.
Well, it's an acid, so it clogs up and burns up the voice box, so you can't shout or make any noise. Which I was like,
as fucked up as they were, I thought they kind of had their shit together. And as far as to incapacitate him, like, hey, make sure he can't scream first. You know,
yeah.
A gag is so like 1980s. Like they're just like, fuck it, we're just gonna shoot like drain cleaner into his throat or whatever. And then the whole way they lobotomize him, another lobotomizing movie, by the way, after watching Reanimator, I was like, okay, so they're going to drill a hole into his head and then pour boiling water into it. That's different. I haven't seen that.
Yeah, I didn't see that either.
You know, so I hadn't even heard about the Jeffrey Dahmer.
I didn't find that either until after I had seen it. I was like, oh, I wonder what else was going on in this movie.
But I mean, I look at this movie as like, I know, like Wally would be like, I have a hard time getting by the torture porn aspect. And Tim's like, well, I've seen everything before. But I looked at it as the way they, the title of the movie, The Loved Ones, I love the aspect of showing how the family has been affected by, both families been affected by the loss of someone they care about or they love, and how it's affected their lives. Like the kid is obviously was in a great spirits in the beginning of the movie. It seemed to have a great relationship with his dad. And then 6 months later, he's completely wearing a razor on his neck. He's cutting himself. He's obviously guilt-ridden and full of angst and anger. And
what about the police officer father coming and seeing him in the pit? And then, I mean, something totally out of Misery, you know, getting chopped in the head.
I've heard a lot of people say that the cop is stupid. I mean, it seems like this is a small town.
He's running on emotion.
Yep.
Yeah, I can I haven't heard I didn't think about that criticism of him being stupid by just going in by himself.
Yes.
Now, okay. To me, he's just running on emotion. Mm-hmm. You know, he's being very emotional in his decisions, and rightfully so, I think. But yes, if you think back to it, yes, he should have been more thoughtful and called to the station.
But I do like how that scene played out because, I mean, it doesn't linger. Like, he walks in, he looks right down the hole, and right away he gets killed.
It's the same thing with Misery. You know,
I don't remember what scene in Misery is.
Well, the town sheriff or whatever comes and is looking at Annie Wilkes's house and is about to walk in on James Caan, and Annie Wilkes shoots him from behind. Oh, that's right, because James Caan is in the basement.
Yep.
Is in the basement. He's at the top of the stairs, and all of a sudden she takes a shotgun and shoots him in the back.
Okay. I don't remember that. It's been a while since I've seen Misery, but I love that reveal of the pit and seeing that there are three like adults down there, and they started doing this when these guys were kids.
Yeah,
I mean, other than the guy that got away who was like a teenager, you know, these other kids that are shown in the book, they're like 6 through like maybe 12 or something like that.
Yeah, but you never figure out like what happened to the guy in the middle of the street. She just mentioned he's the one that got away,
but he's probably dead by now. I mean, obviously the family hasn't located him.
Never located him. But you think that somebody would have noticed the
bloody
body walking in the middle of the road? They're out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, you get a sense that this is a very small town. Like,
well, still, he recovered from the accident, and when he hit the tree, when he swerved around him, what happened to that guy?
Yeah, the paramedics would have certainly come find them, and they would have seen something.
Wait, what?
In the beginning of the movie.
Yeah,
the guy,
I get the guy that's walking around. He's lobotomized, though.
Okay, like, but where is he? What happened to him?
Where'd he go?
No clue. Maybe he kept walking out into the Australian wilderness, for all I know. Like, you don't know. You got to admit, when you see them walking, they're out in the middle of fucking nowhere. Like, there's nothing around.
Yeah, I don't know, because, you know, by the end, she's, you know, ready to seek her revenge, and she's just walking in the middle of the street. I mean, what does she expect?
She's obviously deranged at that point. I mean, her father's just been killed. She's just smothered her mother. She's obviously deranged. I mean, I love that final scene where she's just walking down the street. Initially, when I saw the car, and I'm thinking it's the guy, and it ends up being his girlfriend. And
now,
I'm like,
yes, I agree. I did like that final confrontation between the two girls, and it's just them and a knife. You know,
classic horror movie.
That
stuff.
That is very well executed. It's very well shot.
Yeah, I love how much distance they put between them.
But once again, I'm like, okay, here comes the guy in the police. First of all, why didn't Lola drive away in the police car? Why didn't she drive away?
I just don't think she's in the right state of mind. I mean, she's obviously deranged. Like, she's walking down the street with a knife and a prom book,
still she
singing a fucking song.
I don't know. She's conscious enough to close the doors on. No, she didn't close the doors. Never mind. Either way, I don't know.
That's the other thing. She left that pit door open. Yeah. All she got to do was close and that dude's fucked.
Right.
Like, she's not in a right state.
No, that is a good callback to his rock climbing scene earlier in the movie.
Also a good callback to the beginning of the movie where he swerves around that guy and hits a tree instead of this time he swerves around that guy and hits her.
Right.
So I don't know. Just a lot of nice touches in this movie that really worked for me.
I agree. There are some nice touches in here, but ultimately it just didn't work
as a whole. It didn't work for you.
So we did ask Twitter, and we got three reactions. Dwayne Tillman at Crazed Cinephile, he said, "I loved it. I had a fucking blast with it. Thought it was everything I could ask for in a horror film." At Vex Poet, "I don't know. It was fine, I guess." So I asked, "Can you expound on that a bit?" "Not really. I don't remember any kind of meaningful response to it. Concept is better than execution, if I recall correctly." And Elliot McGuire at Elliot M. 2312, "Awesome film, so much more than torture porn. The bastard child of Tarantino and Roth, if they grew up and stopped homaging."
I like that one.
So grades, I will give it a C plus.
I'll give it a B.
B plus.
Sounds like a B average?
B average.
It's a B average. Okay. Okay, that does it for this episode of the First Time Watchers podcast. You can find us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. We post movie news and updates that we think you would be interested in. And you can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at 1sttimewatchers@twitter.com.
Or follow us on our Tumblr page, firsttimewatchers.tumblr.com.
And please download our episodes on iTunes and feel free to leave a review. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you have any suggestions of movies for us to watch, please send a tweet, an email, or post on our Facebook page. And stay tuned for our next episode. We'll be continuing our spooky movie...
Spooky!
Halloween Movie Month with a recall remake episode of Carrie, 1976 and 2013.
That's the First Time Watchers podcast because we like to watch.
All for now.
Should I?
No, that sounds fine.
Yeah.
Should he have his lips pressed against it?
Why? Every time.
Speak in this tone right here.
Oh my god. You're making me uncomfortable. Although, we don't seem very loud. Oh, there we go. Oh, waveforms, I love you.
Oh yeah, waveforms. Get up there.
So maybe Wally should be a little bit closer.
Well, let's see. I'm trying not to, like, talk maybe directly into the microphone, see if that helps. My voice level, so I'm not like
shouting into the microphone
all the time. Yeah, see, so I don't do stuff like that.
Hey, what trailer are you going to be talking about?
Shit.
Is that a movie? I don't think I've heard of that movie.
It's a great movie. It's 60 minutes of some guy's rectum just with poop coming out. That's all it is. Disgusting. It's like the movie Ass in Idiocracy.
What's that dude's name from South Park, Mr. Hankey? Is he in it?
No, it's the sequel to Ass from Idiocracy.
So you haven't figured out a trailer yet.
I'm trying to think, what the hell did I see?
Oh my god.
Have you seen any movies in the theater?
Last movie I saw in the theater was Gravity.
Okay.
You could talk about Time.
I hate you.
I could talk about it. It just gave it a glowing face. Glowing review, like, this movie's going to be the best thing ever!